This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 653, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Episode number 653. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
You all know his name, how he earns a living. We are iFanboy. Every week we read our stack of comics. One of them picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about some other books. Usually about 40% of them are written by Tom King. We're working on that. The patron pick. And maybe if we have time, we will listen to some listener mail. The goal here is your, and completely honest, our entertainment. You're going to talk about what happens in the books, so there will be spoilers. There's your warning. Connor, you had the pick of the week this week.
I did, and I think it was last week, although I can't remember because of the cold medicine, if we threw down the gauntlet for comics this week and said it's your move because we had 2 weeks in a row that we thought were really strong. Mm-hmm. I had another really strong week. At the end of the reading comics, I didn't have an immediate choice, but I went through my little checklist and I identified 6 books that I would put in the top echelon.
Oh, wow.
These books, I could all justify making the pick of the week. Mm-hmm. Now, of these 6, which was my favorite? I ended up with Action Comics 1003. Brian Michael Bendis, Yannick Paquette, Nathan Fairbairn, Josh Reed. A bit of a surprise pick, I bet, from a lot of people. But I'm on a Superman high right now. I can't help it. And after that Booksplode we did, where we talked about Superman Blue, Electric Superman from the 90s, I think what Bendis is doing here is really tapping that vein. It feels very much like those kinds of comics. It's firmly back in Metropolis with the supporting cast. Mm-hmm. Even the cover, which is a terrific Patrick Gleason cover, is very much feels like a 90s cover with the dramatic caption. And I'm not saying I'm having a 90s revival, but it just feels like what Bendis is doing here is tapping into a really fun Superman vein, the likes of which I don't know if I've read since the Dan Jurgens era. And I'm just going to use that to encompass the entire 90s Superman era.
You mean Dan Jurgens' recent era?
No. Well, we liked that too.
But for that reason.
But there was a different feeling. I think they were still working out what Superman was. And the modern Dan Jurgens era was very much dominated by Jonathan and that dynamic.
True.
And this has gone back to Superman in Metropolis, Clark Kent, the reporter.
And it's great. Is that at the beginning of this, they literally blasted Jonathan into space.
Right, exactly.
With his stupid father, who shouldn't have existed either. And if there's any justice to these people, they just won't ever mention them again. Like the first season of Weeds.
I want them to take Damian with them. Mm-hmm. Take him on a little science trip.
Come back around.
I mean, there is a book called Super Sons coming back about the two kids, but maybe it can be set in space. Mm-hmm. And that they can just live in that bubble and bother no one again. This feels much more traditionally Superman than even that Dan Jurgens run did. And it just, I'm on a kick right now. I'm on a Superman kick. It didn't hurt that this featured Yannick Paquette on art, who is terrific. And This was, I thought, a really well-structured issue in which the new reporter of the Daily Planet, who we know is working with the criminals, goes to a shady criminal bar, gets an item from the shady criminals there. We find out it's a little kryptonite, piece of kryptonite. So now we have the gun waiting to go off, right? Back at the office, Clark's in his ill-fitting suit at the Daily Planet, and she comes back, and so then we have that panic moment where he gets sick, and he's got a cover for that. And then, of course, Batman shows up in the middle, as the cover predicted, and he takes the kryptonite from the criminal, says, I'll have this, thank you. And I think his voice even cracked at the end like that. What if Batman sounded like that? Would he be as intimidating? I'll have this, thanks.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not in the same way.
No.
It would be awkwardly intimidating. Like, ooh, I need to get away from this dude.
So she goes back to the criminal bar and says, hey, which one of you rats ratted me out to Batman? Because he knew I had it. And then the red mist, which we've seen before, shows up and kills the woman she's talking to. Superman shows up and she is able to play the damsel in distress to success. And then there's a nice little cliffhanger involving Lex Luthor and Lois Lane, who I guess is Lois Lane, because we haven't resolved how she's back, but also still in space. Really well constructed.
That's my favorite clue to the fact that Space John won't be coming back, is that they just quietly moved her back to Earth and didn't mention anything about it. No, she's working on a book. But what about the kid? Yeah, so she's working on a book.
But you were a Jonathan fan.
I was. I enjoyed that series. I enjoyed Superman as father. It's over now.
You enjoy his entire catalog.
Yeah, but I have no problem with moving along from it like it never happened. I liked the experience, but now let's reset the board again. You did that. And I don't care about the continuity, repercussions, or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, all right, wipe it.
When I was done with this issue, I thought it just hit on so many great Superman levels. I loved the scene with Superman and Batman together after Batman gets the kryptonite. We talked about this before, but I think there's only a few characters where Batman can lighten up, and I think Superman is one of them.
Yeah.
Lighten up in Batman terms, not so much.
There's still that, like he says the thing about, you know, like, I've got it.
Yeah.
There's the implied threat, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
But he's going to make it into a friendship necklace.
That's nice.
That made me laugh. He shouldn't make that joke with the Flash, but he should make it with Superman.
Right.
And Yannick Paquette is terrific. I like it when he shows up. I don't know if he can or can't do a regular book. He hasn't really done, I haven't seen him do a monthly book since it was a Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Jeez, is that long ago?
Yeah, it was. I'm happy when he shows up. He draws a great lantern-jawed Superman.
Mm-hmm.
His Clark Kent is great. I love that he falls over and everyone's like, Jesus, you're big.
Yeah.
They can't get him up.
I liked that scene specifically, like the drama in that scene was that, are they going to learn Superman's identity? And that just felt like such a quaint thing.
Yep. And also, I love those, the great detail of he hates it when you touch his tie.
I did too.
Under the tie would be the suit. You know, if you loosen his tie, you're going to see the suit.
Like it's a thing that people know about him.
Yeah. I just love that. I've never seen that before. Bit.
You know what my favorite part was?
What?
When he shows up at the bar and you just hear what happened here and the last what just happened here. And then as you flip it, it's Superman coming into the bar and he just goes, I asked a question.
Yeah.
So I like it when he gets a little like angry dad.
Yeah.
Like with people. Like these aren't necessarily supervillains, but he's like, okay, motherfuckers, you do need to pay attention to me now. Which I think is kind of raw. Like, I mean, like, don't piss off dad.
Yeah, for sure.
He did that before, like an issue or two ago in one of them, there was something where like he was like, I don't have time to be nice right now. And so there is an element of that that to me, like 100%, Bendis has like 48 adopted kids at this point. So yeah. Like he understands that like I want to be the good guy. I want to be the nice guy. But sometimes I got to take care of shit, you know, and Superman would have that aspect. And I like that.
Totally. Oh, Superman's in a great spot right now. And I could not be happier about it. Bendis continues much like Rick Remender to get terrific artists to work with him. Bendis has a track record of not only discovering new people, but getting really great veterans to work on his stuff.
I also think he's better. Like there was a little while where the people he was interested in, where I was a little like, really, that guy? And I feel like he's honed that in a little more. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about like David LaFuente or something like that, which I think some people be like, why would you do that? I love David LaFuente, but I think there was a period where he was super into David Finch and then he was really into Mike Diodato. And I thought those were odd choices, but maybe not for the books they were on. I don't know. I've come to really like both of those a lot more than I used to.
Things change. Tastes change. Times change.
I mean, they're not my favorites, but I can get it.
And even though this is an ongoing story, this is a terrific issue that anyone can pick up and read and enjoy and get a full experience.
Absolutely.
It gives you enough information. You know that the woman in the beginning is bad. You don't need no more than that. If you haven't read these books yet, if you haven't checked out Bendis' Superman yet, this is a terrific issue to check out. Action Comics 1003.
I'm not used to that four-digit thing yet.
No, it's throwing me off. It's a lot of numbers in my mouth. It's a really great issue.
Hold on, I'm going to write something about a power here. Hang on. I'll work on that and see if I can come up with anything. But
I don't know if it's true or not, but I feel like every time Doomsday Clock comes out, it's in the same week as another giant book. This week we had Heroes in Crisis number one, Tom King, Clayman, Tomu Murray, Clayton Cowles, and this is the big of... I don't know what is an event anymore, but this is the big book that they've been leading to for a while.
It's a big universe, what's the word when it goes across? Spanning miniseries, right? I mean, that's the idea. It sort of is going to... And it's like, you know, it's across the mainstream part of the line.
And it's got Crisis in the name.
Uh-oh. I didn't even put that together.
One of nine. Has Clayman always been this good?
Well, here's the thing. I think that he's been going towards this for sure. First time I knew Clayman, I believe he drew a Magneto miniseries that was Scotty Young's first published, like,
oh wow,
miniseries. And so I knew him sort of from back then because Scotty told me about it, and he was pretty good. You know, it wasn't great. You'd see him pop up here and there. Then he did a run of Batman not too long ago, and we basically said the same thing, right, but to a lesser extent. We're like, well, this is really pretty good. And then sort of like, so this is like the next step, which has happened very soon in that evolution. And earlier in the week, you know, like a week ago or so, Tom King had said something like, the artists on this book are doing the best thing in superhero comics right now. And I was sort of joking with him. I was like, you know, you work with Mitch right now, who just won an Eisner. And Mitch is like, no, he's not wrong. And so I kind of had a high expectations. And I was like, how good can it be? And it's pretty good. You know, it's pretty good stuff.
We talked about the run-up to this, and I have some slight reservations about injecting PTSD and trauma into superhero comics. So that sort of weighed into the background of my reading of it. On the other hand, I liked this issue. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And I think one of the reasons why I liked it but didn't love it is that it didn't give me a lot to go on. Even though a lot of things supposedly happened in it, there's not enough information to really gauge what actually I'm reading.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I should have known going into this?
I don't think so.
I don't either. Okay, which is fine. In that way, it works. Like, this is what all first issues seem to be now, are they're teasers.
Yeah.
Really, they're, you know, a cold open. You're not supposed to get anything. You're supposed to see who's in it. You're supposed to see some great artwork. You're supposed to see, you know, a cliffhanger at the end, and then all will be revealed, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, it's sort of among the least vague of a Tom King first issue.
Maybe, depending on what's actually happening.
It feels a little more mainstream than a lot of this stuff, I guess. And not in a bad way. It's just a better blend, maybe, for a wider audience.
It feels about as mainstream as Batman.
That's true, but yeah, I think I'm comparing it to Mr. Miracle and some of what I would consider to be sort of his prestige runs. Yeah, you're probably right, but I mean, I think that's something that he gained while working on Batman.
Mm. So, I mean, the only things that really have led up to this that I've read is, you know, we've been reading Flash, Wally West getting sent to Sanctuary, and that was really it.
I don't remember what that is.
Well, this is Sanctuary, the house.
Right.
Is where heroes go to heal mentally.
Right. Okay.
We haven't seen it before.
I dropped the Flash.
You dropped the Flash.
We were saying I got to drop some stuff, and I was looking at everything this week, and I was like, it's pretty good, but I'm not reading it because I love it. So I stopped.
This week didn't matter.
Exactly.
It didn't tie into this. Mm-hmm. So Sanctuary is a place where heroes go who need mental health help.
Is it not a person? Is there a person called Sanctuary or no?
It could be. It could be that. Well, the house is definitely called Sanctuary. The person is also a person. So interspersed in this story is we see there's a bunch of 9-panel grid one pages of heroes talking to whoever it is. I guess we can just call them Sanctuary for now. So you've got Harley Quinn, you got Blue Jay and Arsenal and other.
Hotspot
I've never heard of. Was Wally one of them? No, just Arsenal.
Yeah.
And Booster Gold. If you read the Polygon joint interview with Tom King and Brian Bendis, which is terrific, check it out if you haven't read it. He said, yeah, I mean, everyone knows this is my exploration of PTSD, but I don't want it to be about that. I don't want you to think that's what it's about. It's about a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
the big mystery is Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman show up to Sanctuary because something has happened, and they find everyone inside Sanctuary dead except for Booster and Harley, who have gone, but Harley's trying to kill Booster, but everyone else is dead. Wally West is dead. Arsenal's dead. This Hotspot character is dead. Blue Jay is dead. Very gruesomely. I didn't realize the birds were eating him until I flipped back.
I did. I actually zoomed in. Before I read his thing, I sort of zoomed in on the digital page, and I was like, that's got stuff. And then I compared it to the other page. I was like, oh, that's the helmet of that dude from the other page.
Well, I just thought it was blue entrails, and I kept going. And then I was like, wait a minute. And I went back, and I was like, oh, that's dark. So everyone's quote-unquote dead.
So Harley was there?
Steel. Yeah, Harley was there.
Okay. So, I mean, my thing with this would be, like, I'm 100% okay with – I don't want all my books to be like this. We've just been talking. We've literally been talking for weeks now about how, hey, let's do 90s Superman kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but if anybody's going to get to do it, I'm okay with Tom King do it. And I'm totally okay with it doing it with a sort of enclosed miniseries type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this is going to go over, you know, every, you know, how it's going to go into everything else. But, like, it's done really well. It feels to me like a little like Identity Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how that started out, and it's a thing. And, you know, I know that's got to be in the back of his mind when he's thinking about it. There already feels like there are consequences. Some major characters have died. I just air quoted because who knows what that means.
I would be surprised and shocked if these characters are all really dead. I would be very surprised if they, after bringing back Wally West with all the fanfare that they did, basically killed him off camera. I would be very surprised, and that's why I don't buy what I'm reading in terms of the reality.
Yeah,
the
but there is a level of doubt, so you kind of don't know, which is enough to make it intriguing.
Sure.
You know what's interesting is that, like, we're in a little bit of a rebirth of Booster Gold, which happens every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he also had at least a few issues in that Superman Blue book. And then he was in – Tom used him in
Batman
for a while. Like, I just been around a little bit, so it feels like they primed the pump for more Booster Gold, and all of that has been his big blustery, making bad decisions, doing whatever. And I like that this is the other side of that. Like, there's no way that dude's not fucked up, and I'm okay with exploring that.
Yeah,
you know, Roy, he's got dumb glasses and a hat, so that's a problem. that's enough. You know, and I like the idea that there are a couple of other sort of lesser silly heroes that would be there too who couldn't handle their shit.
So I'm interested and I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
And I love how it looks, but that's all I can say at this point about it.
I think that this book is vastly more enjoyable to me because of the fact that you and I get to talk about it like this.
Sure.
If I hadn't been able to sort of hash things out and sort of which is great. That's what that's like the good part about how a book should be, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but in this kind of thing, like, we can go over it. And so it doesn't even have to be great because it's providing a kind of experience where you're chewing on it and thinking about it. And I think that adds a lot.
Hmm.
I like that part.
Doomsday Clock 7, Jeff Johns, Gary Frank, Brad Anderson, Rob Lee. Another refrain that remains the same. I don't know what this is.
Hey, man, something's happening now, though. That's all I thought when I was reading. By the time I got to the end of it, I was like, all right, well, here we go at least.
Yeah, exactly. But it's 7 issues in.
I don't mind that.
More dicks this week in a DC book. Dr. Manhattan's in there.
My first instinct is at the beginning, I can't really fault them for this, but in the beginning there was definitely that callback basically to Watchmen. It is this time, it is this place, it is this thing. It's basically the idea that Dr. Manhattan experiences all these things at one time.
Right.
And part of me is like, yeah, you don't have to do this because he already did it and it was perfect. But that's what the whole thing is. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so the heroes, the weird grouping of heroes, fake Rorschach and Ozymandias and Johnny Thunder and Saturn Girl have found Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
It's an accident. They rescued Batman and Comedian from the Joker and Mime and whatever that guy's name is. And Dr. Manhattan appears and takes away everybody but Joker and Batman to wherever it was they went. And they have a chat.
You know what I liked?
What?
I always do feel like the one thing that Watchmen left us with was, like, I want to know more about Dr. Manhattan, and I want to spend more time with him. And this really did scratch that itch of, like, that dude, that's a fascinating character that was set up.
Yeah.
Jeff Johns is, I think, doing a really good job at what he's writing seems to be in character. And the bits at the end I thought were really, really well crafted.
Yeah, I thought the last sequence was really good and interesting. So he lets them all go, and we see a bunch of, you know, a flash of imagery as Dr. Manhattan looks around through time, and we see the kid, fake Rorschach, mailing something to Lois Lane, and we see Black Adam killing people, and we see Batman, and then he sees Superman running at him, swinging to punch him, and then he sees black, and he sees nothing beyond that. So,
and then they spell it right out for us, which is fine.
It still looks great.
I mean, there's bits in here where Gary Frank is doing almost Bolland level Joker stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it's real good artwork. Now, I still think the problem is it's Gary Frank kind of doing somebody else, but I felt like he was a little more free here.
It's the best Joker, though. If you're going to do it, might as well do it.
Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong. The Joker was a little silly in this, but it worked.
It feels like Geoff Johns was leading towards this point, and it took so long that the rest of DC said, we're just going to go over here. And they went sort of the Tom King way, where all these other big events are happening, and Heroes in Crisis is happening, and Doomsday Clock seems to be relevant to nothing else in the DCU.
I mean, I'm fine with that.
I'm fine like with reading it, but it just feels like Geoff set up the DC Rebirth book to be like, hey, we realize the DCU is fucked up. We're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And then he set up all these other stories that they helped do, like The Button. Mm-hmm. And then it was all leading to this Doomsday Clock story. And then this has taken so long that it just sort of feels inconsequential. And comics don't have to be all tied in, but they made a big deal of announcing it with the big DC Rebirth special. And, oh, we're going to fix all these characters that have felt wrong. And it just hasn't happened. And it's weird.
I mean, I think I'll feel like I'd be able to speak to that better when it's over because I just don't know. Yeah. But I'm also not paying that close of attention to it.
It's just strange. It feels like he just got passed by.
Can I take a sidebar diversion that has nothing to do with anything?
Sure.
Okay. I was thinking about it, and every time I see Matthew Good, who played Ozymandias in the Watchmen movie, I get really happy because I think he makes a fantastic erudite asshole.
He makes everything better.
He's really great. He's just in The Crown,
yep.
Which it sucks because he's not going to be anymore. And then I was watching, there's an Agatha Christie murder thing that is on Amazon now.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Bill
yeah.
Nye. And he's in that. And he's an even bigger asshole. And I was like, and so like in retrospect, I'm like, he was a perfect Ozymandias.
Oh, he was great.
I mean, with all the context that came after the fact, I was like, wow, he really was a good choice for it. And I don't think that we gave that enough credit.
No, every time I see him, I get excited.
Yeah.
Old Man Hawkeye 9 also in the mix, but I was like, I can't pick this again.
that age old, like, all right, fine. For something to really be put up there for the third or fourth time, like, it has to really be spectacular.
But it remains terrific. And so we jumped the gun last issue when it was picked. We thought that Hawkeye had killed Songbird.
Oh, they did that to us. We didn't, you know.
We assumed that was what was happening because he had killed everyone else he encountered from Thunderbolts. But turns out he didn't kill her, and they have a conversation until Bullseye shows up, and then there's a terrific fight in the cathedral.
And what's great, though, is that this isn't even the big fight.
No.
And it was a great fight. I was like, this is a wonderful action scene. And there's a bit where Bullseye's disappointed because he's really literally just spoiling for a fight. And he's like, oh, you're not going to be able to help. You're blind. And then he's like, hey, you know, this is a fight. It was wonderful. It was that, you know, it was kung fu. It was great.
This is, I mean, out of nowhere, man. Marco Cicchetto, we've known for a while, is really good. But I think he's doing some career work in this miniseries.
Yeah.
And Ethan Sachs, as we talked about, is a former reporter from the New York Daily News. And I don't know how he got this good at writing comics. But it's all working.
Yes.
And it's super fun. Whenever a new issue comes out, I'm really excited to read it. I mean, you got muscle car chases. You got sort of Mad Max on the road. And
Marco Cicchetto's done a bunch of things, but the first thing he did that I remember was some miniseries that Greg Rucka wrote that was really good.
Was it Punisher?
It was a Punisher. I think it was a Punisher miniseries, or it was like the end of a Punisher run.
Mm-hmm.
That was great, and I was like, this guy's pretty good. And then he did a bunch of stuff that was okay, but like this is sort of the promise of that thing. And yeah, I don't know what drugs Ethan Sachs is taking, but
performance-enhancing drugs. It's good. It's really, really, really good. The Amazing Spider-Man number 6, also real close. Nick Spencer, Humberto Ramos, and we're going to talk about the other art in a second. But, I mean, this book continues to be really fun. It was a small issue, basically, in which Peter tries to deal with having a roommate who's also a supervillain. And basically the crux of it is him going to a Spider-Man trivia night. Because Peter says, oh, I'm an expert in Spider-Man. But the middle section, 1, 2, 3 pages. So at one point we turn the page and it's Shocker and it's who are the Boomerang and who's the third guy?
The car guy.
Oh, right. Overdrive?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I was like, whoa, what is this? And I scrolled back to the front, to the title page, and the art is only listed as Humberto Ramos.
Hidden Lieber.
So I went back, and I was like, is Ramos doing Steve Lieber? And I was like, is it possible Ramos is way more talented than we ever realized? I think he's great. I love his art, but
yeah,
such a different style. And I was really impressed because I thought it was him doing Lieber. I was like, wow, this is incredible. Why isn't anybody talking about this?
I did the same thing, but I did not come to that conclusion. I thought, oh, there's just some Lieber pages in here. Cool.
So I kept going. And then at the end, you know, it's the surprise credit. Mm-hmm. Spectacular super
superior foes of Spider-Man
pages by Steve Lieber and Rochelle Rosenberg. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, yeah, it's still awesome, but I was, for a minute,
that's,
I was like,
I
wow,
feel like that's some insider stuff. Like, I can't imagine many people read that.
Yeah,
you know, and that's like a, you know, Steve Lieber's, he's not even a fan's favorite. He's like a pro favorite.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
He's a pro's pro.
But either way, I was like, oh, it got me kind of excited. This is a really fun issue, just overall. It's got just the right amount of silly.
Nick Spencer is, I was saying this the whole time, is the right guy for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is a little too silly, a little too goofy.
But he's also smart, and Nick is...
smart, too.
Maybe too smart for his own good.
Yeah.
In that sense. And so he's tried to apply that to other things, and it didn't work. But sort of the, like, he, I don't know, like, the dude who just found the tone that he could write really well and is doing a great job with it. And if you think it, like, Peter Parker's this guy, he's a fish out of water, he doesn't fit in anywhere, and then he just found his most perfect thing in what would be supposedly the worst possible place.
So he goes to a villain bar with his roommate, and he's like, this is terrible, I'm surrounded by all my villains, this is going to go badly. And then it's revealed that it's Spider-Man trivia night, because of course Spider-Man's villains have a Spider-Man trivia night.
In costume.
In costume, and Peter just wrecks everybody.
And I like that the thing was that, like, he was right. I was like, please don't make this a thing where he knows the answer and everybody else is saying it's wrong. Because mm-hmm. that would be, and then he's, you know, it's his identity. Hey, who really are you? You know, blah, blah, blah. I like that. What's the robot that they have there? The living brain, which is definitely not a Chinese made knockoff of the living brain.
Yeah.
You know, that is just, it just knew all the answers. That was the arbiter of it.
But also, I like that when he wins, the villains are all like cheering him. They're basically. Yeah. They're basically carrying him on their shoulders, and it's kind of like, listen, I know this is wrong. However, I haven't had a moment like this in a while, so I'm going to take it.
It was a great issue.
It was a really terrific. This was probably in the second position behind.
The cover for the next issue is fantastic, too.
I'm telling you, this might be my favorite Marvel book right now.
This is one of those things where, like, Nick Spencer had written that Boomerang character, and just for a half a second, he shows up and you're like, oh, come on, you're going to use this guy again? But now I'm like, this is absolutely the right choice. Like, not enough people got to know it before. Put him in here. He's interesting. And the way that you write him is unique. 100% do it.
That was all really good. Let's take a quick break to talk about iFanboy and how you can help, you dear listeners. We depend on you to keep the show going. And you really do a great job of helping us at patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go sign up, become a member. You get all kinds of member benefits, including voting the patron pick, getting us patron power, doing the monthly patron hangouts, all kinds of fun stuff, including the private Facebook group we have where people are chatting all the time on it, including very mean polls about which is the best iFanboy member.
Did I win?
I don't remember.
It's not true at all.
You won the which iFanboy am I closest to in taste poll.
Okay. No shit.
Yeah. Which is weird.
That's surprising.
Considering years ago. Anyway, all kinds of fun stuff at patreon.com. We have stretch goals there. That's how we get to the next level. And our next stretch goal is a non-comics media podcast once a month. Josh and I will talk about something in non-comics media, much like the all-media podcast at the end of the year. But we added a second part of that stretch goal, and that is we will upload all the missing full-length video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website. The old shows were all just recently removed from the internet by Discovery. We only have our newer ones that we distributed ourselves. So if you want to see the old ones.
You know what I have in front of me?
What's that?
I have in front of me a hard drive that has the final episode of every episode that I ever edited.
Oh, wow. Right.
That I dug out. And I edited the bulk. I don't know about the majority, but I definitely have the plurality, probably most.
I don't think that's accurate, but you have a lot of them.
I think it is because of the way that we were set up at the time. And also, whenever there was an opportunity to edit, I always volunteered. So I did the con shows and everything. We split the other ones up. I just really like doing it.
So we have those, and we'll upload them if we hit the next goal, which is only about $300 away. So if 100 listeners out there join up to Patreon, just 100 listeners, which is a small fraction of the listenership, we can get to that next goal. You can get all those shows re-embedded on the internet, and we'll have a great time. Also, t-shirt store, fanboy.threadless.com. 7 shirts. You can find all the designs there, including our most popular, which is the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters nihilistic t-shirt. GDAT just sold another shirt, Josh.
I was hovering over a GDAT phone case so, just yesterday.
You can get them on shirts. You can get them on phone cases. You can get them on bath mats. You can get them on all kinds of things over at fanboythreadless.com. Fanboy.com.
It's like, that's going to be a fun conversation in my office. What is that? That's GDAT. It's a goddamn
You should American. Do it. Fanboy.com/support. Direct donation via PayPal is found there. You can help us out if you want to become a patron or buy a t-shirt, which is totally fine. People do that all the time. Fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to buy our Booksplode books, as well as a general Amazon link. So we do thank everyone who helps us out in all the various ways. You do keep the show going. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Justice League Odyssey number 1, which I assume you did not read.
No.
No. Which is, I mean, the whole DC Metal / the Source Wall broke and the stupid force and the strong force, that stuff's all bad. I don't like any of it.
I'm making a hand gesture right now.
But Justice League Odyssey number 1 is one of the books that spun out of that, including we had Justice League Dark, which is all the magic characters plus Wonder Woman. This is Justice League Odyssey, which I guess is a reference to Cosmic Odyssey, and has some of the more cosmic characters, include Cyborg, Jessica Cruz, Green Lantern, Starfire, Azrael for some fucking reason, and the surprise member of the team, which is spoiled on the cover but is revealed as a big surprise in the issue, is Darkseid, which was funny considering how great Darkseid is in the Mr. Miracle book and how different he is in this book, as we discussed last issue. Fine. He is younger. He's got like a hood, which the old Darkseid used to have a hood, which is not that out of the realm. But he's got all those Omega symbols on him. It's just not the same, guys. It's just not the same.
It's fine.
Written by Josh Williamson, who was really good. Art by Stefan Sajic, who did the terrific run on Aquaman. It looks great. I actually really like this issue.
I'm glad to hear that.
Even though I don't like the premise, even though I hate Azrael with a burning passion.
How do you feel about Anarchy?
I don't mind Anarchy. He didn't take over for Batman and become an asshole.
Yeah.
He's just annoying.
He's not French.
I like the French.
It's Jean-Paul. Is Jean-Paul he French Valley. Or is he like French-Canadian?
He's probably French-Canadian.
That is even worse.
So, and even though it's a reminder that the way that they've done the New Gods is stupid, I really enjoyed it. I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can see at least 6 Omega symbols on Darkseid's clothing. It's too much.
See how long the artist wants to keep that up.
It's too much.
They probably do it with Photoshop. Just paste them on.
The thing is, his tailor's like, I don't really think this is a good idea. And he just like more Omega symbols. Like, okay.
Well, I mean, to be fair, on Apocalypse, most of the service workers are not happy with their lot in life.
So
it's not like Darkseid's going to do, like, if he thinks of it, you know what would probably annoy that guy?
So Omega. This was actually fun. And if you like that mix of characters, Stefan Sajic is a really good artist.
Hold on. We need to put Azrael on the list then.
Yes, Azrael definitely goes on the list.
Really? I don't think that I was aware that you... Because I missed most of Azrael.
Well, the thing is, he was, you know, it was the whole broken bat thing. Bane broke Bruce's back and Azrael took over and he had the armor on and he was an asshole and he cut people up. And
you know what just came out was that Bane, like a collection of that whole Bane story.
Yeah, I don't want it.
Nightfall.
Yeah, Nightfall. Terrible.
I know. Maybe instead of our Books Club Love Fest, we read something that you thought was awful.
The only thing here that is dumb is, so you've got Cyborg and Starfire, two veterans of the new Teen Titans, you know, from the 80s. We know that Cyborg wasn't on that team because he's been with the Justice League from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And yet it is implied that they were teammates and they're old friends. And it's like, no one knows what the fuck's happening in DC.
If that is referring to the Teen Titans Go to the Movies continuity,
then you're fine.
I'm totally fine with that. Are you aware of this film?
Yeah, I'm aware it exists, sure. Yeah,
it's a you need to see it. It's a fine film.
I don't care about that.
There is a sequence. This is a spoiler. Go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. There is a sequence where the Titans go back in time and stop Bruce's parents from being killed. Mm-hmm. But then they decide that was a bad idea, so they have to go back and then guide them down the alley again. where you see the gunfire off screen as it flashes, and it's the most awkward thing. It's a great movie. I've seen it twice.
So there you go. The Justice League Odyssey. Let's talk about Shanghai Red number 4.
Saw you put this on the list.
Christopher Isabella, Joshua Hickson, and I wanted to talk about it because up until this point, the character of Red, who's been exacting revenge on all those who caused her to get shanghaied, as the title says, finally ran into some problems. Because up until this point, she's pretty much done what she's set out to do. She finds someone, she kills them. And so I was getting a little repetitive. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked that in this issue, the guy she goes to kill doesn't take it so kindly and then ends up blowing up in her face. So she's got to overcome some obstacles here. She hadn't had to really do that yet.
I understand.
That was nice. And it was a pretty brutal fight that she had with the guy.
Yeah, that's true.
This might have been my favorite issue for that reason, because it was like, oh, she's not just going to be very good at everything. She's going to face some adversity.
I think that's probably the right choice from a creative standpoint. Maybe 4 issues in wasn't the best place to show it, but that did sort of leave it that element of surprise.
Yeah, I like that. I like this a lot.
I enjoyed this. I think the only thing that got me on this was, A, I read it very late at night, and it was like, oh, I need to be sleeping now. Mm-hmm. And so there was some time jumping that had sort of gone on, and it was a couple of times where I couldn't tell if I was in the present or the past.
Right.
In the tunnels.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in the tunnels.
No.
Don't go down there.
Apparently there are multiple tunnels.
Yeah, there's different. There's
the Shanghai tunnel. There's the Chinese tunnel. That was a great sequence, too, where she ends up in the Chinatown segment. They're like, get out of here. Get in your own tunnel. And there was a whole speech about how we're going to destroy you eventually.
Yeah.
It was great. This was really great. I'm glad you told me to read it.
I'm glad that you are still reading it and that you are enjoying it.
I am.
I feel like I have to touch on the Sentry again.
Oh, boy.
No kidding. This guy, Kim Jacinto, this is some of my favorite art that's happening in comics right now.
Hmm.
You can see it on the cover. It's very, it's like Otley mixed with Humberto Ramos.
Hmm.
It's very Otley-like. And everything's a little exaggerated. And actually, that works very well for the Sentry. And when I think back, maybe Jay Lee wasn't the right choice to bring Sentry into our world because of that. But, it also goes along with the theme of there's basically a thing that happens here that's sort of a big deal where we finally get off. The one thing that this miniseries has done is it's done a lot of things with the Sentries that we hadn't seen before. And up to this point, including the things that Brian Bendis did with the Sentry, it was the same thing every time.
Right.
Bob is sad because Bob is crazy because if he becomes Sentry, then the Void is going to come and that's really bad.
Right.
Bob is scared. Blah, blah, blah. And this, Bob just sort of accepts it. And then basically the end of it, the thing is he merges with the Void and becomes like the Dark Sentry. It's not really called the Dark Sentry, but basically it becomes, and he's like, I'm whole. I'm finally whole. And like the art is great. It's super, dynamic and over the top. And the Sentry is sort of recognized for the threat that he is in a way that I actually buy, as opposed to most of the time where it's just told and not shown.
Hmm.
We keep talking about Jeff Lemire and like he's, he's in overdrive right now on a lot of different things.
I think your turn on the Sentry has been one of the untold stories of a fanboy. You turn towards him with love in your heart.
That's a lot easier than the other.
Is it?
Maybe not easier, but it's a lot more enjoyable than just hating something for the sake of hating it. Like, for example, I'm not going to just hate Michael Chiklis for the rest of the world for no reason. It's a waste of energy.
Those are the comics we want to talk about. Go to ifanboy.com. You can find the post for the show and talk about the comics you want to talk about. But also, we talk about the Patreon pick. That's at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every single patron gets about 48 hours to vote on a book to add to the rundown. And this week, it might have been the biggest blowout in patron pick history. I think it might have been. It was almost a 20-vote win for this book. Maneaters number 1.
I found that surprising.
Yes.
Just because... So Maneaters number 1 is written by Chelsea Kane. That's correct, right?
Yep.
She wrote the Mockingbird series, it turned out to be a miniseries, I guess, which ended sort of quickly. And then her cover, which was, what's Mockingbird's name? Bobby. It's just a shirt that says, ask me about my feminist agenda. And of course, that made all of the alt-right weirdos go nuts, which I'm fine with. But I don't remember any reaction from our fan base about that series at all.
No.
I think I'd mentioned it a couple times. I mentioned the first issue, and I mentioned the last issue for sure. Mm-hmm. I know you read the first one. I thought the last issue was actually really pretty good. I enjoyed it. It had the Phantom Cowboy guy, and his name is, he's in the white suit with the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really weird. I thought the art was great. So this is the same team who did that, I think. So I was just surprised to see that much of a reaction, but maybe over time that story became bigger or whatever.
Is it the same artist? Is it Kate Nimsek?
I think it is. I didn't know that until I was reading it, but then I was like, I recognize that name, and I feel like that would be the only place. We can check up on that while one of us is talking.
She's really, really good.
Yes. And I will say right away, first thing I saw in this is sort of some artwork. There's basically a like a public notice, be advised of a cat attack. It's sort of silly. And then there's a cartoony tampon-based superhero. And I thought, is this going to be like angry independent comics kind of thing? And then it very quickly settles into what is a fairly straightforward kind of story. There's definitely a social commentary going on in the background of it.
Well, first we have to get the huge mistake out of the way.
Okay.
Which really bugged me. Page 4, when the narrator, the girl, is talking about her dad, explaining how her dad's a cop. She says, when I tell people my dad's a cop, they think of this, and you see Tom Selleck as Thomas Magnum from Magnum P.I. We see Don Johnson, Sonny Crockett from Miami Vice, and Sonny Crockett's a cop. Thomas Magnum.
P.I.
A fucking P.I. It's in the title. Magnum P.I. I don't think he was ever a cop. I think he went from the Navy to become a P.I.
I think. Boy, wait. Actually, I'm sorry. I know we have a show to do. I've never thought of this to now. How did he pay for the Ferrari?
Higgins. Higgins was the caretaker for Robin Masters, who was the rich author. And those were all Masters' cars.
Okay.
He didn't pay for anything. He was living in the guest house. He drove the cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I would argue that what she said is this is what people think of when they think of a cop. And most people would probably think, yeah. And also then Tom Selleck went on to do the show Blue Bloods, where he did play a cop for a while. The mustache is still iconic. He's got a cop vibe, if nothing.
He went from Navy to PI. He never, ever was
a
cop.
In a literal sense, you're completely right. Are we able to move on from this?
I don't know if I can.
I was upset by the fact that when they started talking about a dad, first of all, I think that first page, your PI comment notwithstanding, was very good.
Yes, very good.
And
page.
That instantly assuaged my fears of the first page. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to be what that is. Because it was a comment on like sort of what kids think of their dads. And I see like the dad who has a shirt that says best dad. And he's in bike shorts and he has a bike helmet and he's got a beard. And I was like, oh, shit. I'm firmly in this camp. Now, as they went on and closed in on him, the dad got fatter.
Yeah.
That happened. And then he went to the crime scene in his bike clothes, which I think is a mistake. He gets those off as soon as possible. And then what followed after that I thought was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Not spectacular,
yeah.
But pretty interesting. Felt like a mid-grade Vertigo book after its heyday.
Right. So the conceit is that there's a mutation in cat poop, whatever that stuff, isn't it? They explain it at one point. I can't find the page where they explain
it. You can talk. I know the word.
So there's a mutation which infects the populace because everyone's got some in them, apparently. And it infects some teenage girls, not all. So when they menstruate, they turn into cat beasts. Wild,
no, feral. It affects everybody, but most of the population is inoculated against it. But there are certain people to whom are immune, and they're all they're adolescent girls. And when they, menstruate or mature, then they become giant killer cats.
Right.
And it's toxoplasmosis is the word they were looking for before.
They've removed menstruation from society.
Yeah. It's a werewolf story with a menstruation slash feminist underpinning that they're trying to make a point, which I think is pretty valid. And I find stories like this interesting because we get stories like this very often are written by men. And then this is trying to say a different thing. And the allegory, I think, tends to be a little more clear cut in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, because it's different from so many, like basically a lot of man based werewolf stories are about the hidden beast within the male rage that is constantly being checked or something like this. And this is a different spin on that to a certain extent. So I find that interesting. It gets a different voice than I think I'm used to hearing in a story like this.
Mm-hmm.
At times, I think it was a little on the nose.
That was my biggest criticism other than the Thomas Magnum stuff, which I can go back to if you'd like.
I mean, if you have to get it out, I understand.
It's a little on the nose and a little over the top. Just a little.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're going for a certain vibe, which is somewhat silly. It's not silly because there's a serious underpinning to it, but it's somewhat silly. It's not exactly a Handmaid's Tale, although it's in that realm.
I'm going to make a sweeping generalization right now.
Yeah.
I have spoken before. This is terrible. And I don't even know. I've spoken before about the fact that some of the, for lack of a better term, millennial humor doesn't speak to me in the same way that, say, the stuff from the specifically my generation would have been a little more subtle. And I feel like this is an example of that where part of, like, sense of humor now that is a little more widespread tends to be a little more on the nose and a little more over the top.
Which is funny because Chelsea Kane is older than us.
It doesn't mean that she's not tapping into a vein that
she totally is, yeah.
But I think that's part of it. Like, this is just how I find media to be in general, where it's a little more like they're telling more often, just sort of letting it be noted, because otherwise it goes over people's heads because they're looking on a phone every other page.
Right. Yeah.
That got very old man in bike shorts there. but what I say, like, that criticism, I think you and I both have it. I think it's valid, but I also think it's subjective.
Oh, for sure. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying for me, it's a little, just, it's like two notches over the top, which
it's not horrible. And then there's the other thing, you go way over the, you know, like, and it wasn't so much that it really turned me off, because I've seen that too. There was whatever that meat book we had to read was.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, I get it.
No, this was good. This was good. And the art was terrific. Kate Nemsek should get a lot of work all the time.
I agree.
Let's do ratings out of 5. Ratings.
3.75.
Ooh, interesting. I was going 3.5.
Okay.
But that's fair as well.
Yeah, same artist as on Mockingbird.
Yeah, sticking with it.
I might read the next one.
Yes.
But as I'm on the fence with a lot of things and I didn't really love it.
And you're cutting books. You're in the midst of a purge. You sort of mentioned it offhandedly, but you're purging at the moment.
I mean, it's a very low key purge. I feel like I owe too much to the, I need to give enough stuff, you know, time to do the show properly. But I got some of the things I got to just stop.
Josh talks about 3 books.
That's what I used to do.
It's true.
I feel like I've really stepped it up. In the early days, like, I wasn't reading anything.
That's true. All right, so patreon.com/ifanboys. You can vote your patron pick. Thanks, patrons who voted for Maneaters, who I probably wouldn't have read it otherwise, so thank you for that.
Watch out, boys. It'll chew you up.
Also at patreon.com/ifanboy, if you give the $5 or higher level, we thank you on the show live by giving you a sometimes dumb, sometimes cool, often duplicated superpower.
I apologize for that, but I also don't take it back. It was a notes issue and a memory issue.
Sure.
But you know what?
Don't apologize.
Who's to say that powers don't reoccur in close proximity to one another?
We know for certain, while reading comics, that many people have very similar powers.
That's true. Yeah. Do you know about Mike G?
I don't know about him. What about him?
Mike G, say that you have a customer service issue and you've got to call the number.
Yep.
Do you want to do that?
Not usually.
Never want to do that. So what happens when Mike G has a customer service problem, or somebody close to him does, his eyeballs flip over and they turn white like a supervillain.
Okay.
And then he automatically knows the direct number to the person who can actually and will assist him.
Ooh.
Yeah, he can call up Amazon and get the person.
Interesting. So he basically can automatically dial the real number.
The real number. There's a direct line to the person. I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to be sitting at the desk. He might get the voicemail. It might be after hours, but that's the right number.
With telepathy?
His eye, it's like a savant. Yeah.
Interesting.
The key part is that the pupils go away for a minute, and then he just knows the thing.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Very useful.
I think so.
T. Scott Benefield.
Good name.
You've seen Mary Poppins.
Uh-huh. Not for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, but you know when Bert becomes the one-man band, he's performing in the park, he's got the drums and the cymbals, and he can play, he's got all the things attached to him before the penguins show up, but he's actually in reality.
Right.
T. Scott Benefield can do that. He becomes the one-man band, and he can play expertly songs, and you would think it's the real band singing them, but it's only the Gin Blossoms.
Oh, hey, jealousy.
Yeah. It's like he doesn't actually pick up an instrument. It just pops out of him. He becomes one man band, and he sounds exactly like the Gin Blossoms. He found out about you.
Baby, we can ride around this town. We can let the cops chase us around. Wait, so does it sound exactly like say the recorded track of the Gin Blossoms, or are they reinterpretations of those songs in one man band format?
It sounds exactly like them, whether it's the recorded version or their live performance. It sounds exactly like Gin Blossoms.
Are there live recorded Gin Blossoms performances?
I'm sure there are. They're very popular in the 90s.
It's just the one band.
Just them.
Who had the 1.5 hits 25 years ago.
They had at least 3 hits.
Go on.
Can we look it up?
Hey, Jealousy.
Found out about you.
That's one and a half.
That's two hits. You can't take away their hits.
No one talks about Found Out About You.
It's their first hit, I think. I believe that was in Empire Records.
All right, you know what? I'll round it up to two hits just for the sake of academics. But you know, they're right now they're one step above Marcy Playground.
No, let's see.
Who had one hit?
They were all over the. Why can't I find the Gin Blossoms?
They played all the time for a while, but it's one of those things where an
until I hear thing. It from you, that was from Empire Records. They had three hits.
Okay. So they're like a Goo Goo Dolls level band?
They also had Until I Fall Away, which is a minor hit as well.
I don't remember that.
Well, you're going to hear it on the show.
Oh. Oh. Well, I don't listen to
them. They had. I'm going to say they had three and a half hits, which is a lot of hits.
All right. But you can assign half a hit.
Well, I'm just saying I would say four, but I'm saying you would say half.
That was all within a combined period.
Short period, so for a while.
This is one of those things like a band like that I've noticed can tour today.
Oh, for sure they do. They do
tour.
Go.
Oh,
for sure.
And it was a package tour, I think, for the Gin Blossoms this year.
My coworker goes to all those 90s and 80s nostalgia tours.
That sounds awful.
Gin Blossoms tour.
But that's because they're all those bands that I wouldn't have liked.
You hate
back
them.
Then. Yes, no, that's literally
all those early 90s bands.
Not even bad or good, just boring. Sort of non-counting.
They're playing, let's see. They're in Utica, New York. Oh, they're playing in Deadwood, the Deadwood Mountain Grand Hotel and Casino.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still out there.
What have they been doing this whole time? They can't be living off those four hits. Like,
four hits plus touring. They've been touring nonstop since the 90s.
That's no way to live. For 50-year-old men. I mean, it's not like they're the Rolling Stones where like they tour and they come away and they have $1 million.
No, but I mean, if you get four hits, I'm sure that at least the songwriter, the main guy, has been doing, you know, respectable living.
They're Ed Kowalczyk.
They're from Arizona. They probably live there. It's cheap.
Okay.
How old are these guys? Let's see. Everyone is definitely into this. Yeah, they're almost 60.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, oof. No, they'd have to be. Everybody who was an adult doing a thing that was still a little young when we were that age is now 60.
Yeah.
So like every time when I was watching ER at the beginning, when you'd see somebody go, oh, I remember that actress. Oh, she was really pretty. 60.
So they took 98 to 2002 off. They broke up.
Exactly.
So they broke up for 4 years, but only 4 years. They started in 87.
But in 2002, what they thought is, all right, we'll just hop back on this horse. And then they got there and they're like, oh no, this is Limp Bizkit's world. What are we going to do?
They toured.
I guess. Like, I bet they toured like Dubai and shit.
This is the Gin Blossoms hour now.
This is what you can get if you can get us to the next patron.
Now we're going to lose patrons. They're like, I don't want it. That's for sure. All right, let's move on.
I think you think the Empire Records soundtrack is a bigger deal than I think it was.
Oh, it was a huge deal. Everyone, almost everyone outside of people like Josh in college had the soundtrack or loved the movie and loved the music from it.
Almost everyone outside of people like me in college was boring. I remember going to our college radio station and being like, we're going to do college radio. I've been wanting to do this. This will be great. And then they're like, what we do is we do popular music of the times. And I was like, oh, forget it. And I didn't do it because it was boring. I thought they were going to play bad, weird music that no one knew.
Gin Blossoms, The Cranberries, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Better Than Ezra, Evan Dando.
Oh, he was okay. I had that one Lemon Heads album.
All right, let's go. Come on. Next
one. I'm sorry. Did everyone enjoy that? John Fitter. If you ask John any question that involves a numerical answer or figures or numbers or things that have to be, he doesn't say the answer. A series of clicks take place and ticker tape comes out of his ear. Gives the answer on it.
That's terrific. I love everything about that.
Yeah.
Does he have to, when he rips it off, what happens? Does the paper go back in his head?
I think that little tab is still accessible, but he can fold it back. So they're like, if he goes in the shower, it's not ruined. It doesn't get in the way normally. It's just, it's a feature, not a bug.
So he's like an old adding machine.
He makes that great sound. What's great is that you can test if he's sleeping or not. Like if he's pretending to be asleep, it won't come out. Or if he's pretending to be asleep, the answer will come out. But if he's not really, so you can force him to do it. He had like it adds up and prints out no matter whether he wants to or not. It's involuntary.
It's one of your best ones in a while. Jason Grigsby can turn into foliage. They can turn into a bush. But here's the thing. He's got big cartoon eyes that pop out.
Do they make a noise? Like, boink, boink.
They look around.
Boink, boink. Are they two-dimensional, three-dimensional?
They're two-dimensional eyes.
Boink, boink.
Boink, boink, boink. And then he can pop back to human form.
The bush is real life.
It's a real bush. It's not a cartoon bush.
How big are the eyes? Is it pretty big? Is it proportional to the size of the foliage?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. If he turns into a giant tree, I guess the eyes would be a little bigger.
Okay. So they like, are they like?
Makes sense. It makes sense when you look at it.
Okay. Okay.
You're like, oh, okay, that's the right size eyes.
If he closes the eyes, do they go away?
They sort of fade into the bush, but if you look hard enough, they're still there.
Okay. Just one black line.
Yeah. You turn into a palm tree, you can turn into a redwood.
Where are the eyes on a palm tree? Are they up top?
In the palms. No, the eyes are in the body of the tree.
The trunk.
Yeah, the trunk. I call it body, but that's all right. I'm not a scientist. Okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. And we spent so long on the gin blossoms. I guess we can do one email, but I was hoping to get at least two.
All right. Go up to pick.
Craig from Michigan. Do you know why thought bubbles are not widely utilized anymore? I started reading comics sporadically off spinner racks in the Bronze Age, and I've occasionally read omnibus collections from past ages, and the thought bubbles were super common. Now it seems like a character will just speak their thoughts aloud, which in certain situations seems very unrealistic. I thought the thought bubble was a very effective way of indicating inner monologue. Did creators drop it because they thought it was cheesy? I've been thinking about this silently, mind you, on and off for probably 25 years. I don't think it's accurate that the characters speak their thoughts aloud.
I think that that is a different thing that you're seeing is that they have to get across some information somehow, and it's exposition that maybe previously had been put into the thought balloons, but they sort of weave it into the dialogue, or instead of, you know, they tell you, don't show you.
Well, the thought balloons got replaced by the caption, the first person narrating.
Yes, and that's what I would guess is it's a 1986
thing. I mean, yeah, they I think there's the idea that a thought bubble is old-timey and cheesy. As you
somebody
said in your email?
Did a cool comic book, and I don't know if it's Watchmen, but I'm almost certain Watchmen doesn't use thought balloons.
Yeah, they don't.
So somebody did a cool comic, and then all of Rorschach's stuff is in caption form.
Yep.
And I feel like that is probably the point where you saw the big. I don't think it was instant, but I think
But I think it was another demarcation. Like cool. Adult comics use captions, whereas old children's comics use thought bubbles, and that's kind of what it came down to.
Dark Knight
also used captions.
Yeah. Was it Bendis?
It's come back a little bit. Bendis brought it back in Mighty Avengers, and he's used it a couple times. Jason Aaron also brought it back, I've noticed, a couple of times. It's not widespread, and they tend to be mostly when they want to contrast what a character's thinking versus saying, like for a joke. They've come back here and there, but really, Josh's favorite trope, the first-person narration, has really taken over comics since the late 80s and shows no signs of abating.
No. Yeah, no, I don't like that. I don't mind it but there was, I think it was in the New 52, like every single book was just the guy explaining to you in his head what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a voiceover, which is cheap.
The fact of the matter is they never went away. They just changed from cloud form to box form.
I do think that the box, the caption, they tend to write it in more of the voiceover form.
Well, sure. The way they're written are different, but basically they serve the same function.
Yes, absolutely.
They're portraying the same information. It's just not.
Yes, it's the same information in a different form, both physically and sort of stylistically. And I think, you know, it's just trends and time and, it's, you know, what's cool or what isn't.
Yeah. There's a fear of going back to that thing that was uncool before, but when comics were uncool.
But then you have the other thing, which is, you know, like, wait, what if we do this thing that we used to do, and first you sort of do it ironically, and it's kind of funny, and then all of a sudden it's not ironic anymore, it's just normal again, and then that will turn around and then not be cool.
Right.
You know, that it's just a stylistic thing. It's funny, though, because you've been thinking about it for 25 years, which is literally, it's not new.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think we can do one more. Let's do Davin.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Do Davin.
Davin says, I was listening to episode 650, when the topic of naming children after comic characters came up. I'm a big proponent of that idea and often compare it to naming your child after biblical, Greek polytheistic, or even historical characters. My wife and I haven't had children yet, but we've thrown around ideas like Reed or Parker for when the time comes. We even have our dogs named after characters, though. Oliver after Mr. Queen. Sorry, Josh. And Kenzie after the Mouse Guard character. I like that. Are there other names that you would consider for children?
No, but that's okay. I think it's if you want to, there's nothing wrong with it, if that's what you
it
want
is.
To do.
I think in order to do that, you better really love that character.
Well, I think
or not.
It's pretty safe to really love it if you love Peter Parker. I mean,
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I heard Parker. I was thinking of Darwin's, the Richard, what's his?
We talked about it on 650. We both said Josh hasn't done it. We wouldn't do it. But that's fine. That's just us. You can do it. Nothing wrong with
it. Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their own aesthetic and whatever your thing is. I mean, this is literally what we were talking about before when we were talking about the Chelsea Kane book. Like, if it's too on the nose, I think it's uninteresting. If it's more subtle, you know, or if it's – but also, like, I really do think, like, it's your kid's name, so don't make their name a joke. Or, yeah. Like, don't make their – not their, your kid's name shouldn't be a wink. You know what I mean? Your dog's name.
Yeah, but people often name kids after people, you know. There's a lot of athletes named after Jackie Robinson, especially black athletes.
That's a hero.
Right. Well,
but also he does say, I compare it to naming your child after biblical or Greek polytheistic or even historical characters. Now, biblical characters have a lot of, all names are biblical, so my name is, you know, like that's just sort of what was done because it was considered to be completely real and serious, you know, polytheistic Greek. I mean, if you want to name your kid Hades, go ahead, or mm-hmm. Ares, but you know, that's a tough one to pull off. Or historical characters, I can see a reason for that, but fictional corporate owned characters, not right. as much. But I do think that our like if you read history and you read about the kind of things that people talk about, like the founding fathers, for example, in that era, people who were intelligent, people who were educated would constantly refer to biblical things and they would refer to classical things. So Roman history, Greek history, these kinds of things, mm-hmm. because that was their pop culture.
Right.
And that was the thing that they were schooled on, whereas we are schooled in, you know, 70s cinema and, right. you know, like things like that. And so in that way, it is the same, I think. Because I always used to think, well, geez, I wish I could quote Plato. And I think, well, no, I can quote Taxi Driver. It's the same thing, but it's a different time.
Right.
But like some, you know, people who know a lot about Plato, you know, would consider it less than. And I'm like, it's exactly the same thing.
Well, I'll say this. Like
culture.
I'm looking at the most popular baby names of 2017.
Thanos.
Well, number 31 was Khaleesi for girls.
See, that's terrible. First of all, because you don't know how that show is going to end. It could end like Battlestar Galactica at the end, where you loved it for years, and then at the end you were like, I don't know, I just don't care anymore.
So, I mean, it happens.
Yep.
For sure. Do what makes you happy.
I agree with that. I agree with that. But also think of your children.
Think of the children. Won't we think of the children? Contact at ifanboy.com. That's where you can come and maybe get an email in if we have time. We're not talking about 90s bands that Josh hates and I don't.
I don't hate them. It's not the same thing as hate. I don't get it. I don't know what the point is. I could go on and people are like, man, he's a snob. And I'm like, I know, but I'm not even half as bad as I used to.
You managed to strip away a lot of your snobbiness in all areas except for music, which is like the most perfect thing because the music snob is the worst snob.
Yeah. Yeah, I really want that guy at the record store to like me.
Exactly.
I don't know his name, but I want his respect, damn it. This month, we recorded and released our Books Blowed on Superman Blue. We're ahead of the game.
That's right.
So next month, I owe you all fine folks a Talks Blowed creator interview show. Working on that. We'll figure out it'll be out sometime in October.
Did you set it up?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I don't want to set it up too early. Okay. It's we're heavy into con season right now.
Yeah, that's true.
It's tough to – if you go too far out during con season, then – you lose track, so you kind of got to be able to lock and load.
We also have a handful of books we're talking about for the next Books Blowed. We haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
But we have a couple of nominees.
Yep, that's true.
Some of them keep the theme going of old books we loved. Some of them are not.
Or didn't even know. Didn't know we loved. Some other kind of underwear.
We don't have anything else to plug, but we wanted to plug our old co-host Ron Richards' new podcast, Finale, in which he and his co-host Carrie watch the finale of a TV show that Ron has watched all of and Carrie has seen none of. And you can find that at finalepodcast.com. The first episode was on Gilmore Girls. The second episode was on Smallville. That's of interest to our listeners. interesting to hear someone's thoughts on a finale episode who has never seen the show before. So you can check that out. It's out now.
As opposed to this show, when we never know if we're talking about the finale of a comic series.
Right. That could be our new podcast. Is it the final issue?
It was for a while.
So that's finalepodcast.com. You can find it on all your podcast aggregators out there in podcast land. In the meantime, head over to fanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts, our special editions, our booksplodes, our talksplodes, everything we've done. We're coming into the final turn of the year, which means we'll be getting close to the All Media podcast, and there's no Star Wars movie this year, so there won't be a Star Wars podcast. We're getting close to the end for this year.
Solo.
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It was 5 months ago.
I remember nothing about that movie. If you want to know what the pick is before the show comes out, maybe you want to know what the pick is before the show comes out.
Did you just do a Jay Leno for a second?
You know what the pick is.
His
WTF was interesting. It wasn't great, but it was interesting.
It was exactly. Yeah, like I didn't come out of it like I hate him or I like him, but I was like, well, that's a weird dude. And not in a bad way, just that's an interesting dude.
You can like us at facebook.com/ifanboy and follow us at ifanboy on Twitter. That's how you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Or you can do it on Patreon as well. If you're a patron, we tell them too. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of voices. I don't ever do them anymore.
You don't?
But I do know that when I went to see Pearl Jam a few weeks ago, my wife was like, he sounds just like your impersonation of him when he talks. And because most people do the like, rah-ha, the Adam Sandler one.
Right.
And they don't do the talky one.
Which is better. It's always better.
Which is what he totally sounds like, because I had a live concert in like 91, and that's where I got that from, and he does the same thing now.
Sure.
But several times he will introduce somebody, and it's always that rock and roll, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. And it was like the guy from Buffalo Tom played with them because they're a Boston band.
Right.
Anyway, if you dig the show, you know, you could write a review for this show or for finale. Leave a star rating. That's what means the most to us. Better yet, you know, tell your friends. Go out there.
Couldn't give it up, could you?
Yeah. Well, it takes everything like three times as long. So it's actually the same as a Matt Saracen impersonation from Friday Night Lights, except it's a deeper voice. Matt is no, we just can't get the words out. We've been watching Friday Night Lights. Tell your friends about the show. Help spread the iFanboy. Tim Riggins kind of has a lady face.
Kinda, but it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. He's very pretty. Yep. Help spread the iFanboy love in any way that you can. We always appreciate that. I'm going to stop talking now.
Okay. Well, that's it for this week's show. For this latest edition of the Gin Blossoms podcast, I'm Connor.
What? Now I have Gin Blossoms songs stuck in my fucking head.
I wasn't going to use one this week, but going to have to now.
I don't agree with that at all. What if you chose something that I like that no one knows? That isn't really like that. It's not actually that interesting. It's just what every like, you know, really basic hipster stuff. Like I'm not that cool that like you have never heard of what I'm listening to. It's just that you heard it and you don't get it.
Sure.
That's my thing.
Okay.
Sometimes I think about my wife and how awful it must be for her to listen to me, and then I just had the same thought about you, and I felt bad for you. You also suffer.
Well, we suffer in silence.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired. But it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.